Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel. Matt, we haven't done one of these together in a while. Our podcast schedule got a little compressed. Real life, damn real life, are imposing on our podcast schedule. But we actually have a subject that you and I have argued about and debated in the office that we wanted to touch on in this podcast. But so we're going to start off, I think, with a designated hitter. We'll get to expansion later. That's the one we'll probably disagree more, I presume, correct?
Probably, yes.
I think that's safe to say. But let's start off with the DH, Matt. You kind of touched off a little firestorm on the Baseball America comment boards by advocating for the addition of the designated hitter in the National League. It's titled Three Reasons That the NL Should Adopt the DH. And I guess we should start from the standpoint, it's an important part of the lead of your story. You did not do this lightly. You didn't come into this as a anti-DH-ite or as a pro-DH guy.
Right.
But I think if you preferred a style of play, you preferred the National League, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I've been following National League baseball more closely for 27 years.
Right.
And until about a year ago, I would argue against the DH, you know, for probably what could be deemed aesthetic reasons.
Right.
And I just found that the argument held less and less water the more I looked at the data, the more I talked with industry sources about, you know, what's going on below the major league level with pitchers hitting.
That was a big part of this. And, you know, so if you aren't familiar, and if you haven't read the story, shame on you. But if you aren't familiar, a big part of this for me when you pitched this as a story idea was the lack of plate appearances and hitting opportunities. So it was a player development angle, but the lack of hitting that minor league pitchers do. And I guess it makes sense in some ways that
right.
They don't hit a lot, Matt, because you'd rather have your prospect or a player who could be a prospect, could be a major league hitter, get those at-bats. But hitters only hit in the minor leagues, pitchers I should say, pitchers only hit in the minor leagues a double A or above when two National League affiliates play each other.
Correct.
So I can't remember seeing too many pitchers hitting the minor league games I've ever been to.
Me neither. And, you know, what's odd is, like, as part of the job description for a major league pitcher in the National League, you have to bat 60 to 80 times.
Right. If you're a starting pitcher, exactly.
And in your entire minor league career, you might bat 20 or 30. I mean, how can we expect pitchers to hone their craft, to improve as hitters? I just don't think it's realistic with the minor league structure we have in place right now. I mean, we could all say, well, yeah, pitchers could be better if we did give them the repetitions in
or
the minors.
Or they should be better.
But National League teams have not made this a priority. So, I mean, it comes down to that for me. It's like, if Major League teams don't care about it, why do I care about pitchers hitting?
It was actually one of the first stories I did at Baseball America. It may have actually been my first story. It was a fall 1996 package that we did that Jason Stark wrote about pitchers hitting. I think the peg of it was that there were a couple of pitchers who were doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Hampton, I believe, was early in his career with the Astros. I forget who else we pegged it to. I remember that I did a sidebar that Jim Callis completely rewrote on on Wes Farrell.
Nice.
North Carolinian, one of the all-time great hitters as a pitcher. And I believe the premise of the story was that he's the best hitting pitcher of all time.
Yep.
So by the metrics that we use in 1996. So it's kind of funny that was when you pitched the idea to me. And what startled me, Matt, was just seeing the data on how much worse pitchers hit now than they did 18 years ago, but especially 40 years ago. So in this DH era, since the National League really has become the only league in North America, other than I think maybe the Northern League's Eastern Division or something like that. There might be one indie league that doesn't use the DH.
Affiliated ball.
But in affiliated ball, the National League's the only one. And since that happened, the demise of pitcher hitting is startling.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, why do you think, aside from the lack of repetition in the minors? I mean, I touched on one potential theory in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that pitchers focus on pitching more as amateurs now than they used to.
I think that's the biggest thing, is just specialization in all sports. It's true in all sports. I mean, I don't watch hockey, so we have to bring in Jim Schoener. But in the other professional sports, certainly in soccer, players are specialized and differentiated. In basketball, in football, both those sports have increased specialization, especially football. But in basketball, there's certain players who their only job is to be spot-up shooters, or they just shoot. They either shoot threes or layups, so that's it. And that's, as big data has impacted basketball, it's really changing the way basketball is played. And we've seen in baseball the evolution of specialization over the years.
Yeah,
a lot of it's the La Russaization of the game, and if you can use that as a verb. But just the hyper-specialized bullpen and the game that has created. So to me, pitcher hitting is just part of that. It's pitchers are specialized to pitch, not to hit. And so that's just become like a vestigial part of being a pitcher. It's certainly not essential, so it's becoming like the appendix. That just, it's almost more trouble than it's worth. So it's not almost, it is more trouble than it's worth. That's kind of your point, is that it is more trouble, and you have pitchers who get hurt hitting. But more than that, it's just not entertaining. It's just not appealing. So what do we do about it?
It's not competitive, right?
It's not competitive. So the question is, what do we do about it? So the easy answer, I guess, would be to just adopt the designated hitter in both leagues. But boy, I'll tell you, that simple suggestion has not gone over well with so many traditionalists. I guess I put it in my
hackles
head.
Hackles are raised.
They are raised. This is one time where we actually physically get to see hackles raised. One thing that you really also see about this is that it ties into Chris Rock's little 7-minute speech that he gave on Bryant Gumbel on HBO's Real Sports about why blacks aren't as interested in baseball anymore. I'll keep that to Chris Rock. But one element of that discussion was tradition and how baseball is always about throwback,
right?
And looking to the past. And that really seems to be a part of the DH discussion, is that,
yes,
well, Major League Baseball was good enough for 104 years without it, if you want to date it to 1869, mm-hmm, without the DH, and now it's better. It doesn't need it now. That's really the only argument for pitchers hitting in the National League, it seems.
A lot of watchers also like the decision points the manager faces regarding pinch hitting for the pitcher and the double switch.
I saw that argument.
We can talk about that too if you want to.
Yeah, I don't mind, because it does seem like that makes for less strategy in a lot of ways. It's just de facto that the pitcher's going to bunt, you know, or that he's going to strike out or make an out. So that reduces there's more play. I would say it's counterbalanced by the complete lack of drama when a pitcher does hit. The only thing that the pitcher hitting really contributes, besides that potential strategy of the double switch, that kind of thing, like you said, which I'll grant that point, but I think it's counterbalanced by the ineffectiveness of pitchers hitting. The only other contribution is the comedic value,
right,
from a Bartolo Colon at bat or some of that.
In the age of the GIF, that has some soft value.
Exactly. It's like soft power. You know, it's like Hollywood for the United States overseas. It is soft power, the pitcher bad swing.
Mm-hmm.
But we can get that from some inept position players as well. Maybe none of them as comedic as Bartolo Colon, I will grant. But that has diminishing returns. Bart's over 40 now, so
mm-hmm,
at some point we're going to lose that comedic genius that is the Bartolo Colon swing. But the other reasons seem to be falling by the wayside. It really does seem mostly bound up in tradition, does it not?
I think that's fair. And the strategies that managers have, the best practices managers have developed because of that tradition.
How many of those guys, how many National League managers really are masters of the double switch, where you really, I guess I'm wondering how many games in the course of a year does that really affect? It seems like it was pointed out by some of the commenters that Bruce Bochy in the postseason has been particularly adept at the double switch, knowing when to double switch.
Yeah, but kind of the downside of the double switch is you have to remove one of your starters, too, who is, you know, theoretically one of your eight best players.
Right.
So to me, that's kind of a downside to it.
It's one thing to double switch for Juan Perez, but there's no strategy involved, and you're never going to double switch for Buster Posey, no matter how much you like Andrew Susak.
Exactly.
You're never going to double switch for your 3-4-5-hole hitter, so it's not really that much. There's not much to think about there. What were some of the other reasons? Did our readers give you any other reasons for why they wanted to keep pitchers hitting?
I got one really good response to the story in my opinion, in that somebody suggested that the players most likely to play DH could be taking roster spots from young players who are more versatile.
I like that one.
I thought that was an interesting way to look at it. You know, the thought being that, you know, tying up a roster spot in a hitter only is potentially taking one away from a younger player.
Right.
Who's trying to break into the majors.
A younger player who's theoretically more athletic, more dynamic, can help your team in more than one way to win. So that's the thing that, in general, about specialization that is counter to what we do at Baseball America, where we're trying to find future big league players at the high school, college level, those kind of things, and in the minor leagues, where in general, what you're a lot of things, times you're looking at players who have more than one way to help a team win. And so frequently, the lure of the five-tool player, por ejemplo, not just that he's exciting to watch, but it's that if the guy doesn't hit, he can still help you win a game with his arm.
Right.
He can help you win a game with his wheels. He can help you win a game with his glove. But that is not valued necessarily at the major league level. Because now it's, well, I don't want, even want him running or trying to help us. David Ortiz is trying to help you win a game in any other way than with the bat and
right.
with the power. He applies two tools, and that's it. The other ones could be 20s, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
And that is kind of counter to what, you know, so that specialization does kind of retard the development. It could potentially retard scouting and player development to me, and it feels like it kind of does, and it has in the bullpen.
Yes.
Where instead of pitchers being developed to be starters and to be well-rounded pitchers, just go throw as hard as you can out of the bullpen, and you can help us win that way. And that way, it creates a less entertaining game, at least to me.
I agree. I mean, that ship has sailed, but I mean, I agree with your premise.
You know, so there's already this creeping specialization with the DH and with the bullpen. I'm not sure how you counteract that, Matt.
And it's interesting. And like to me, how would a player who can only hit and hit for power have less claim on a major league roster spot than a one-pitch reliever?
Right.
Than a defensive-only utility infielder?
Right.
I mean, there's already one-dimensional players in the major leagues, even
Correct.
Without the DH.
So railing on the DH because it creates one-dimensional players is kind of that ship sailed. I mean, are you going to eliminate relief pitching? Eliminate guys who are one-pitch pitchers? What, are you going to eliminate a knuckleballer? He's specialization. He's specialized. He only throws one pitch. I mean, that's not. We don't hear those arguments.
Eddie Gamboa, pack your bags. You're out of here.
Exactly. Who else is there? There's Ari Dickey. That's it, right?
I think so.
What happened to your boy who was with the White Sox?
Charlie Hager,
yeah.
He's not on a 40-man.
Oh, wait, Stephen Wright.
Yes.
Stephen Wright.
He's the third 40-man player.
I will spare everybody my terrible Stephen Wright impersonation. But I do like my joke about the lack of interstate highways, or the fact that there are interstate highways in Hawaii,
yeah,
because Stephen Wright went to college in Hawaii. That would be his joke.
But we do, we solicited opinions on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, we did. And if you aren't following already, it's at Baseball America on Twitter and our Facebook page. A lot of video been loaded up to our Facebook page, so make sure you give us a like over there if you haven't already. It was from Facebook, actually, that I thought we had the best suggestion from Stony Setzer. The only way I'd be okay with the DH, which is kind of funny because the DH has been around for 40 years. So, but Stoney says, the only way I'd be okay with the DH would be a stipulation that the same player cannot start consecutive games as the DH. If the DH is done on a rotating basis, it would give regulars some rest without taking them out of the lineup while keeping bench players sharp by giving them more playing time. However, I don't like the idea of anyone being a full-time DH. Stoney, that again, it's been 40 years, so... Baseball's giving you time to get used to the idea, but I do kind of think that's a creative suggestion, don't you?
I do. I like that one. It's interesting. I don't know if you could implement it. What you would probably end up with is just platoons.
Right.
The Red Sox, for example, would have Ortiz and Napoli just rotate first and DH every other day.
And that would be in some ways more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You would see if a player like Big Poppy would get taken advantage of more. It seems like players don't do that, Matt. You know, even with all the extreme shifts. We don't see more bunting to beat the shifts. Would we see more players try to bunt to take advantage of David Ortiz playing first base? Well, I don't know. I don't know if you'd see that. There aren't that many other players who are full-time DHs. But
That is a misconception. A minority of AL teams actually have a full dedicated DH.
It does seem like instead they kind of, not necessarily platoon, but they do use the DH to give their worst defensive player a spell. But I mean, like outside of Big Poppy, Victor Martinez.
Billy Butler.
A few other guys. Yeah, Billy Butler is like the one rare case in recent years of a young player who essentially broke in as a DH. I mean,
yep.
I know he played some early career first base and that kind of thing, but very quickly the Royals decided, nope, we don't want this guy with a glove on his hand. So, but I mean, would do you feel like if Billy Butler had been forced to play 80 games a year defensively, would he have gotten a 3-year, $30 million contract like he did this offseason from the A's? Or do you think his career would have developed? And I think we'd be worse off for no country breakfast in baseball. I like country breakfast. I like Victor Martinez. I like seeing David Ortiz hit. I like seeing all those guys hit. So
right.
I don't have a problem with it, but that's an intriguing idea. And that would allow you, again, those younger players who are more versatile would break in a little bit more.
Yeah, adding the DH to the NL would also allow Buster Posey, for example, to play DH. And I think that's better for the game.
I would agree again. Yeah. A couple of these other ideas, let's discuss some of these. Let's go to Twitter first. Brian McWilliams asked, what about starting a pitcher with a 2-0 count? At least make the at-bat interesting. Outs are too automatic right now. That's a radical idea, it feels like. Very radical to give a pitcher a start with a 2-0 count. How big of a difference do you think that would make, Matt?
I think Zach Greinke could approach 100 ops plus.
Yeah. That's it.
I don't know. Would it make an impact on the guys who just don't have any feel for the barrel at all?
No, I don't think so.
Because you're still going to get fastballs, you know? Can a bad hitting major league pitcher do something with the major league pitcher's fastball? I guess that's what it comes down to.
I mean, would most teams give their pitcher a take sign on those first two pitches? At least, I think. So then you'd almost have less competitive at-bats because you'd have one chance to swing, you know? I mean, like, outside of Greinke and the occasional Mike Leake and some of those guys who do handle the bat.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like it. I don't like the suggestion because especially if it's 2-0 count, would that change if there's a runner on base and the pitcher's asked to bunt? Hmm. I mean, that would seem like that would be – you'd want to go to normal rules with a runner on base because in those cases, pitchers generally bunt and are, you know, somewhat successful at that. So I think that's too radical of an idea for me, Brian. But I do appreciate your participation. Jesus Zoidberg, I'm guessing that's not his real name. Only thing I could think of is having the DH for any position on the lineup besides the pitcher. That's also a radical idea. What do you think of that one?
I like that one, too. I would be in favor of that. And I want to know why that's outlawed in the major leagues. Do you have any idea?
No, I think I guess because they came to it in the... I mean, the obviously, the early 70s were not the first time they thought of the DH.
Right.
It was thought of, like, what, 70 years before that? Like, right around the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries.
I believe the 20s or 30s, yeah.
So there were ideas already for a DH before, but I think it was because they already knew that pitchers couldn't hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to replace the worst hitter on the team, the pitcher, with a better hitter. So this is the solution. It was a solution... And they went. It was a problem, and they went to try to find a solution. But the problem always has been pitchers can't hit. So that's why I've reached the conclusion that you have, that pitchers haven't been able to hit for a long time.
And should they be expected to?
No, they shouldn't. And do teams want to invest the time to make them good hitters? Absolutely not. They are comfortable with pitchers being that specialized, just as they're comfortable with all their relief pitchers being that specialized. So that's why I
kind of like if you had the Dodgers, for example, they have Greinke and Kershaw and Ryu, all pretty good hitters, pitchers. They could conceivably play a defensive specialist at shortstop or catcher that they feel will give them an advantage and not have to bat that player while batting Greinke.
Now, that would be interesting. Then they could have played. Then Arsbel, Arway, Barrientos might have actually been a big league player.
Miguel Rojas.
Right.
Tim Fedorovich. I mean, they've had a lot of guys who are strong defenders.
There are probably days where they wish they could hit Greinke instead of A.J. Ellis when they play A.J. Ellis. So that makes sense. What is the career? Are the Dodgers, or the Dodgers have the best hitting pitchers as a group in baseball?
I would have to say
in
that
general
would be yes. Well, maybe not now that they've added McCarthy. He's
non-competitive. He's a non-compete. I mean, but Zach Greinke, I guess, in my mind, I'm pronouncing his name like I'm Alan Matthews. Greinke.
He had a 60 ops plus, which was the best of any active pitcher when I looked it up.
And so he actually gets, when you look at...
He's the freak of freaks because as an American League prospect, he never batted in the minors on his way up. And yet, he's the best hitting pitcher.
This is true, of course, as an amateur. I think we all know about how good his athleticism. He's just a really athletic player, an athletic pitcher. But this was a guy who was who was recruited originally by Clemson as a third baseman. Third baseman slash pitcher in the same recruiting class. I'll say it for the millionth time because he's the last one standing. It was him, Jeff Francoeur, and Jeremy Hermida. Were all the same recruiting class. We also had a good one from the at the triple play. For all interleague games, have a coin toss before the game. Winning manager can decide on DH or no DH. That would mess up a lot of the strategies a lot of these teams have, Matt, where they load up their rosters. They change their roster and shuffle guys on and off the 40-man sometimes to have more pitchers, less pitchers, a different a guy like a Jerry Sands gets called up if he's in the National League for an interleague series because they can DH him and then he gets sent back down when that's over.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun to think about. Even if you had the managers decide without a coin toss, like when would they make the decision by, you know?
Right. Next week we're going to play with the DH. Us
24 hours before game time.
Right.
It gets a little murky. It might be fun to experiment with, but I don't think it's viable.
But after that email, after that tweet at the triple play came around to your way of thinking, as Urge Overkill would say, and said, seriously though, NL teams aren't exactly breeding their pitchers to hit. It's time for the NL to adopt the DH, which was your conclusion. And then John Magny says, get the pitchers in the cage so they can put together a decent AB or bring on the DH and extend a few careers.
That's also the conclusion.
That's the conclusion, and that's the thing, is MLB has not decided to get the pitchers in the cage extra times, especially in the minor leagues. I guess, Matt, what I'm wondering is, if Major League Baseball did say, you know what, instead of giving Kyle Roller, not to pick out Kyle Roller, but a guy who was basically drafted as a DH, and has been a DH most of his minor league career, instead of giving DHs more ABs in the minor leagues, we're going to let pitchers hit from day one in the minors. So from the GCL all the way up to the AAA leagues, pitchers always hit, and so that we can give these pitchers chances to develop as hitters. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would help? And do you think that would make it in, say, 10 or 15 years, would that make you willing to have pitchers hit again? Would it change your mind?
As to the first part, yes, I think it definitely would improve their ability, because I see that as the major hindrance to why not only that they're bad, but they've gotten worse and acutely worse in the last half decade.
Right.
As to whether that would be a more entertaining game or not, well, that's subjective. I don't know. What do you think?
I actually think it would make it better. I mean, I'm not a traditionalist. I think the game has to change. That said, I like the idea. I think if pitchers were a viable option to hit, where it wasn't comically bad how bad they were, mm-hmm. and if it weren't almost an automatic strikeout, then I would have some. I mean, I just know from playing Stratomatic what a difference it makes when your pitcher has a good hitting card.
Right.
And you've got an Adam Wainwright.
Right. Yeah.
It really makes a difference.
Yet no team takes advantage of this.
Correct.
Systematically.
Right. They don't. And they haven't decided that's a big enough, inefficiency to exploit. Hey, we're going to be the organization that has the best hitting pitchers. That hasn't been a strategy that I can tell from anybody. So it must not be enough gain from that for that to be a strategy. So I do think if you change it all in the minor leagues, I do think it would make a difference. But I think I'm just over that, and I'm just ready for the DH. I think baseball needs to unmoor itself from its past in many more ways, and that would be a very symbolic way. I don't think baseball needs to go around pissing off its older fans, which I guess this would do, but I think they'd get over it, personally. Yeah. We had a couple other suggestions on here, Matt. Again, some radical ones. And Tim Murray and JT Hyatt both suggested on Facebook, essentially dropping to 8 batters. Mm-hmm. Another suggested just adding a 10th batter. So in the AL, you make the pitcher's bat, and in the NL, you get a DH. Those would both radically change baseball's history, records. Boy, a 10th batter would really, you'd see the best hitters hit a lot less.
Yes, but that one is a no-go for sure, because we would get less from the best players in baseball. As the 8-man lineups, though, I think we'd have a new single-season hits leader within probably 5 years.
Ichiro would have loved to have batted. I mean, how many more times would he have hit a year? 100?
And maybe the home run record would be in play if some team put a slugger in the 2 spot in the order, you know?
Right. No, absolutely.
I don't like that one, personally, because of the sanctity of league rules or league records.
Sanctity of league rules and records, that's addressed by Elliot Handley on Facebook. Once MLB got rid of league offices and introduced interleague play, the concept of leagues has become pointless, which he's right about that. Mm-hmm. So he says baseball should be separated into East and West conferences, mm-hmm. cut down travel, create stronger rivalries. This is the kind of thing that this DH discussion really spurred, because it has kind of become the identity of the two leagues. Any previous identity you had of the American League and National League, like my son's playing, and he's playing up this year in kid pitch. So there's two leagues. There's the National and the American. The National League is for the better kids. The American is for the lesser, quote-unquote, kids, because it's the junior circuit. So, I mean, that's vestigial from 115 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, in the 1950s, the American League seemed like it was the dominant league. But starting in the 60s, because it was more integrated, the National League really became the dominant league. But all those kind of high fastball league versus breaking ball league, that kind of stuff, that all got superseded by the DH league and the non-DH league, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's really been the total identity of these two leagues.
Yeah.
If you eliminated pitcher hitting, what would the identity be of the what would the differences be between the American League and National League anymore? Really wouldn't be any difference at all.
Just the markets. You know, just the AL's always going to have the Red Sox and Yankees, probably the two franchises that drive
right
a lot of interest in other things in the game.
Right. I mean, it really would be, I think, time to, if you eliminated the DH or if you adopted it in both leagues, one way or the other, if you standardized the DH rule, that would be kind of like the last difference. So in that way, that actually argues for the DH for me, because I do like the league identities. I'm an American League fan or a National League fan, as we used to joke about. You know, we used to have a joke in the office about how, you know, are there really South Atlantic League fans or Carolina League fans? I would say no, but...
Does any other sport have this sort of dichotomy?
No, not really.
Major League sport?
I think that it's really done for in baseball when you consider how they've just changed two franchises from one league to the next.
Yeah. I mean, and there's interleague game every day of the year. So.
Yeah. So to me, I think I'm with Elliot. I think we're both with Elliot. And we've had some other ideas about, and you kind of had this as well, some variations on this theme. First, tying the starting pitcher to a DH, but once the starter is relieved, the DH exits the game with him. And then your idea was kind of a little bit different as well. I guess kind of similar. It's a tweak on that idea, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you explain it. It's your idea.
Yeah, this is just kind of for fun. It's a thought exercise.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of this is.
Allow managers to pinch hit for the pitcher's spot only once per game without requiring him to take the pitcher out. You know, this way, if a one-out runner's in scoring position situation arises in the sixth,
right,
the starter's cruising, the manager can keep his pitcher in and use a pinch hitter without incurring a penalty.
What I found remarkable is that you and then AJ Moss of ESPN, who emailed in his designated pinch hitter idea,
mm-hmm,
trademark to AJ.
The DPH.
DPH. But both of you kind of use the sixth inning kind of cutoff, and it goes back to, again, the specialization idea with the bullpens,
mm-hmm,
where a starting pitcher is basically like, go out there and give us five innings, and then we'll take it from here with our multiple dudes throwing 93 to 97. I mean, that's kind of really where this all gets wrapped up in the game and the way the game is changing, the specialization aspect. And if we're okay with specialization in the bullpens, we have to be okay with the DH. I'm actually more okay with the DH than I am with the specialization of bullpens, Matt. And that's kind of why I like your idea, and AJ's to an extent, because they both try to encourage starting pitchers to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've discussed this. It's not our idea. I forget if it was Bill James's or who wrote this, but middle relievers just are not. We just have more and more games decided by middle relievers who are, in a lot of ways, faceless, odorless, colorless, but they're probably not odorless. But these are not the stars. This would be like an NBA game being decided by a free throw contest between DeAndre Jordan and Shaq. I know Shaq doesn't play anymore.
100%. I think the strikeout rate...
The least interesting part of these games, in many ways, is these middle relievers.
Yep.
And they're outsized part of the game right now.
Right. And teams view them as more or less interchangeable because all the roster machinations they use to get them on the roster. You know, I believe the strikeout rate in the majors in the ninth inning is like 30% so far this year. So, I mean... If anything, I would like, if you want pitchers to bat, they should bat for the first half of the game, and then maybe there's some sort of compromise where in the second half of the game gets turned over to a DH to kind of counterbalance
right,
match up relievers.
Right. That makes some sense.
I don't know how to elegantly apply that, but I think that logically makes more sense.
That's kind of AJ's idea, is it not? The DPH?
No, he wants the DH in the first half.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then sixth inning on, the rules rotate where either the pitcher must stay in and bat for the DPH...
Gotcha.
Or you can pinch hit and take the pitcher out of the game.
And so it kind of merges the two strategies, the AL strategy for the first half of the game, the NL strategy for the second half of the game.
Precisely.
Where the machinations do make it more exciting, mm-hmm, I think, theoretically, at the end of a game. That said, the one thing I never liked about what can be overmanaging or that kind of thing is, you know, it takes a long time.
Yep.
Double switches, these kind of things takes time. There's delays. So I guess some people aren't as don't have as big of a problem with that as I do, but
mid-inning pitching changes are the worst part about watching.
It's absolutely the worst part of baseball, period. The mid-inning change. So we have a billion notifications on this as well, which is pretty hilarious. But a lot of these are tied to a lot of these are actually. But Carlos Collazo, our former intern, actually said that the Bartolo Colon at bat is the only evidence we need for argument against the DH. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty hilarious that people really did. I'm not the only one who picks up on that. Mm-hmm. We have more comments, I think, on the expansion front, Matt, and you and I disagree about expansion. So let's shift on to expansion because I think we agree.
Gladly.
I think we agree that the DH makes more sense for the modern game. And yeah. I guess we haven't even mentioned this, in an offensively challenged era, I don't mind more hitters.
Yeah. I think we'll cycle back around to that eventually. But like to me, it's like, it's not like 100 parts DH positive, right. 0 parts negative. I just think it's more positive than negative now.
It's, so more, that's like, all. It's more like 60-40 DH as opposed to 40-60 that it might have been 10 years ago for you.
That's all I'm trying to convey.
I do think there's one simple part of that that's interesting is that a lot of people, I think, our age or in our age group grew up watching a lot of free or a lot of games on cable of National League teams.
Yep, absolutely.
Today, it's not as true because you can watch every game. But back when it was cable but not internet, the Mets were on WOR.
Yep.
The Cubs were on GN. The Braves were on TBS.
Yeah. That's my entire summer vacation was watching those three teams.
And that's it. And there weren't as many games, but for the good guys on on TV back then as there might be now. Speaking of Major League, again, expansion is one topic. We're really, it was a story idea that I thought of this offseason where I thought it would be a good Major League preview kind of story. We wound up doing an issue later. But to me, I guess what really hit it home for me, Matt, was that when you look at the history of expansion, so post-1961, we're tying for the longest stretch now. We're going to establish the longest stretch in the expansion era, so in baseball's truly modern era, without expansion. And, you know, when the Nationals moved from Montreal, that ended the longest stretch where we had without a franchise move. What was that, 32 years between franchise moves? It's the 10th anniversary of the Nationals. And so since 1952, I guess when you had, what was the St. Louis Browns moved that year to Baltimore to be the Orioles in 53. Mm-hmm. So in the 50s, you had a stretch of franchise moves. St. Louis to Baltimore. You had the Boston Braves to Milwaukee. Of course, the celebrated two New York teams to the West Coast. So you had a lot of franchise shifting at that time, plus all this expansion. We've been settled since 1998. You know, the Rays and the Diamondbacks are fairly mature organizations by now. Mm-hmm. And we haven't had expansion. It's the longest stretch since 1977 when the Blue Jays and Mariners started to 93 when we got the Marlins and Rockies. So I thought it made sense for expansion from a time standpoint, from a historical standpoint. I feel like expansion would goose offense a bit. I just don't know which are the natural markets. I also think 32 teams makes a ton more sense logistically than 30 teams. You can add one to each league, get rid of daily interleague play, which I don't like. So I think there are a lot of reasons that expansion makes logical sense. Where it doesn't make logical sense is where on earth are you going to put two more teams? And that's kind of the conundrum. And that's kind of what our freelance writer, Jack Thompson, found in the feature he did, Matt. As the general feeling in the game isn't so much that it would be bad to expand, it's just that let's figure out the A's and Rays first.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
fix these two really bad stadium situations where the rest of baseball is going pretty well. We're printing money. There's certainly issues at the amateur level that need to be addressed, participation rates, those kind of things. But from a Major League franchise health standpoint, we've got 28 pretty good ballpark situations. Or really, Dodger Stadium and the Royals ballpark are two of your older ballparks now in the game.
And Angel Stadium, right?
And the Angel Stadium, that's right. Those three are the three oldest other than Fenway and Wrigley.
Yep.
So really, let's just settle Oakland and Tampa before we think about expansion. That was kind of your thought, but you also had some other thoughts on why you were anti-expansion.
That
made me chuckle.
Do you want to talk about selfish reasons?
I do want to talk about selfish reasons. Some of them are selfish reasons, and some of them are not. Well, talk about the non-selfish reasons first. How about that?
Yeah, like you said, I would get the house in order first in Oakland and Tampa Bay before worrying about branching out. Though I thought Commissioner Manfred's comments were interesting regarding where MLB would consider expanding, and that would be internationally.
That was really interesting to me.
To me, I would be less opposed to it if that were the case, because I think that would, you know, make Major League Baseball truly an international league, unlike its Triple A sister.
That's right. So Montreal is the obvious one.
Yes.
And we didn't ask Jonah Carey to come on the podcast. It's okay. Jonah's made his thoughts well known within his book and over at Grantland. San Juan, Puerto Rico. There have been major league games played there. Ironically, it was the Montreal Expos that played them there. Monterrey, Mexico. There have been games played there. Yep. Mexico City. Havana gets floated because of this long overdue. And I'll take your emails at johnmanuel@baseballamerica.com. If you don't agree with this long overdue end of America's embargo and this rapprochement with Cuba. I don't know that Cuba, you know, which I guess only has 11 million people, which is kind of startling that it's that small. So I don't know if Cuba, I think of Havana more as an international league city, which it used to be,
than
I think of as a national or American league city. It'd be ironic to have Cuba in the American league.
I think, you know, keeping it to Montreal and San Juan also keeps it, you know, under the purview of the U.S. too.
Those are both countries that where you can draft someone from. Puerto Rico's in the draft and part of the United States.
That's a better way to say it, yes.
So they're both in the current structure, yes. Montreal only makes sense to me if there's a new ballpark there. Mm-hmm. There's no other, and that's what Commissioner Manfred has said. I don't know how likely that is, but I do know the economic conditions are very different in Canada now than they were in 2004, and the early part of 2000s where the Canadian dollar was really weak at some of those times, and the other times it was too strong or was too weak. It was difficult. There's tax issues up there. But really, the ballpark was the big issue. It's remarkable to see their fans fill that ballpark for these exhibition games. Matt, has that stunned you? Or I guess reading Jonah's book, but also just I do remember when the Expos, they drew, I think, 3 million fans before the Yankees ever did.
Yep.
So
So on that front, no, I'm not stunned. I guess just when the ownership decided to cut the organization to a bone is when fans started to not be so interested.
Really, I mean, after the strike and then when Jeffrey Loria became their owner,
yeah.
Loria plus the strike equaled the demise, really, of
which is Expos sad fans. Because it had nothing to do with the quality of
the organization.
Of the organization.
It would be great to have one more organization where they say organization as well. So,
well, selfishly, adding two more teams would add a lot more work.
Right.
Especially when it came time for the prospect handbook. That's yes. 60 additional prospects.
Ooh. A lot. You're holding 960 prospects. Maybe we.
But,
how do we trim that down?
I know we did. We,
top 28 prospects.
We'd have to go into collective bargaining on that one.
It would be tough.
But on the flip side, adding 12 more minor league affiliates also binds X number of players to minor league contracts, which I think I'm probably of the opinion now that there are too many players bound to minor league contracts. The minor league player has less mobility now than I think is. I don't want to say fair. Fair is not the right word, but I think you're bound for 7 years to an organization if they draft you in the 40th round.
So that's a whole other discussion. So maybe we had three full season. Maybe teams have three full season teams, or two full season teams and two or three short season ones. Because really, you want to have more development opportunities for the younger players, but for the older guys, I'm just going to pick on them because I just did the game Monday night on MILB.com and the Durham Bulls broadcast. So say that those two lines with Charlotte and Durham. Durham is like Alexi Casilla, who actually looked really good, especially defensively. But Jake Elmore and Eugenio Velez, these guys really aren't made to be AAA players. They could be an indie ball stashed and be available for all the teams. If you needed a defensive middle infielder, any team could go get Alexi Casilla. And that probably would be better for Alexi Casilla in a lot of ways. You don't get that mentoring of Alexi Casilla with, say, a Hak-Ju Lee. Or Charlotte, which has some prospects with Trace Thompson and Matt Davidson and Kevin Smith. But at the same time, when they have players called up, that was a pretty veteran pitching staff. A lot of those guys have been around a long time.
But can the Somerset Patriots pay Casilla a competitive salary? That's the thing. It's like, I think it is, if you take out those, quote, 4A players from the game.
You're right.
It reduces their ability to actually make money and actually
make
further their livelihood. I would be opposed to it for that reason.
A lot of those players would just stop playing.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily just.
Hmm. I hadn't thought about it that way. That's a good argument. I'm not coming up with a counter right now.
I'm just in favor of the player. I guess player rights is probably the way to put it in the minor leagues.
But then they would have to have somewhere to have those rights where they would get paid. That's the problem, is that Major League Baseball not subsidizing those independent leagues would make it difficult. That would be interesting if there was just a Major League subsidized, like, free-for-all pool.
But your idea is interesting in that any team could, if they needed reinforcements, could have access to them without having to sign them to a minor league contract.
Right, or that could also entail some changes to the 40-man roster, which is, again, has been, as JJ, I'm glad we don't have JJ in here because we get the history lesson of the 40-man roster. That story's coming, but it sounds like the 40-man roster is a very arbitrary number that's been arrived at a long time ago. And again, it's just hidebound tradition as opposed to logic at this point. Other expansion candidates. See, to me, Matt, I'm wondering if it would be time for Major League Baseball, or when will the time be right for MLB to maybe expand again internationally to, like, Europe, or to have maybe some kind of interleague play with Japan's leagues. Mm-hmm. Are those things potential positives?
That'd be fun.
Negatives? I don't know how that could work.
That would be fun. I don't know.
They're building a ballpark in Amsterdam, I know, that will be a potential host site for if Major League Baseball wanted to play exhibition games or even regular season games there, like they did in Sydney last year with the Diamondbacks and Dodgers.
Okay.
And that makes a lot more sense to me. The Netherlands, if you've listened to our old World Baseball Classic podcast, you remember my affinity for the Netherlands, mostly because they put they drown their French fries in mayonnaise. That's not actually the reason why. Because the Netherlands has a baseball tradition, not just has some honkball tradition, not just Bert Blyleven being born there, but their recent tradition of players, not just even from Curaçao, but from the Netherlands itself being signed to contracts, their success in the World Baseball Classics. There's some there with Dutch baseball fans. There's some actual Dutch honkball fans. I think you get 10,000 people. I think if you had a 15,000-seat stadium and you had a major league exhibition, they'd fill it. Now, where else you'd go in Europe, that would be the big question. Whether you'd want to have a team in England for American expats who seem to flock to NFL games when they play them in England. I'm not sure if Major League Baseball feels like Europe is really a growth area for it, as much as maybe Latin America or South America, something like that.
I would not want to wish those plane flights on Major League players either.
Yeah, we need Concords. Major League Baseball has to research the Concorde to bring it back, since it's been mothballed for more than a decade. Other expansion things that we discussed in the story, the New York, New Jersey area. That makes sense, Matt, but do you see the Mets or Yankees giving up some territory?
I can't imagine. That would have to be imposed by above.
San Antonio. I think San Antonio is interesting. It's big enough, I think. I'm not sure what the territorial rights argument would be there for Houston and the Texas Rangers, but I do feel like the state of Texas, first of all, I won't mess with it. Second of all, I do think it could sustain a third major league team. But I'm not sure. And if it were to try a third major league team, San Antonio is the spot.
Oh, yeah.
But they would need a new ballpark, a big-time ballpark, because they can't just play where the Missions play, can they?
No, that's an old facility.
Wolf Stadium, I believe
it is. Yeah.
Don't call me Miles Wolf Stadium. And Portland, to me, Seattle has had enough trouble over the years. Why put another team in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah.
We won't ask Rob Nyer why Portland should be...
Check back in 10 years on that one.
I would say this. Keep a full-season club for more than a decade and then come talk to us, because the Portland... Right. Triple A team has been gone twice, right? It's failed twice in the last 25 years. So, and last but not least, North Cackalack. We're a little biased here in Durham. Matt, do you believe that, especially if now there's rumors that the Triangle area where we live, there's Charlotte, which is 2.5 hours southwest, and the Raleigh-Durham area, which are two separate cities, in some ways near the twain shall meet, but other ways they do meet at the airport in between the two. There was also, 20 years ago, there was a move to try to have the Don Beaver and his group, which owns a lot of minor league teams, buy the Minnesota Twins from the Griffith family and move them to Greensboro. They would have built a city. They would have built a stadium out in Kannapolis, and that bid failed. They would want to get tax money to build the ballpark in Kannapolis in between Greensboro and Winston-Salem.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually working at the High Point Enterprise newspaper at the time for 3 months. In the summer of 1996, before I came here, and the owner of the Enterprise was a minority owner for Don Beaver. And our sports editor there, Benny Phillips, told me that if the team moved, they would need a beat writer, and I could be the beat writer of that team. So I was like all geeked. And then
the Greensboro Twins.
I still took a job here. But that's it. And I just remember it was in one of Peter Gammons of Baseball America columns when I first moved here. In the short notes of the dot, dot, dot section, one of them just had a note about whatever, probably about Jack Armstrong on a comeback trail. Dot, 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 dot. Greensboro, question mark, dot, 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 and then we moved on. That was it.
So like, that second largest city in the state.
That obviously didn't happen. Not anymore. Third largest after Raleigh.
Okay.
But, yeah, Greensboro is sleepy. So we have there's obviously major league teams in Charlotte with the Hornets in basketball and the Panthers in football. Raleigh has the Hurricanes hockey team, which won a Stanley Cup in 2006, but has been a horrible franchise since then. They haven't made the playoffs 6 straight years, I think it is now. And there's talk of them moving this offseason. I've seen articles elsewhere. There's talk of the Hurricanes being bought because the team is for sale. Fellow Greek-Americans, the Carmanos family, wants to sell the team. So if the team were to be sold, that it would be moved potentially to another Canadian market. So that I think that actually would make it more likely. And I've always thought that if the Research Triangle area here, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, if it had, and it's grown quite a bit, Wake County is close to where Raleigh is close to 1 million residents. Actually, the metro area is probably around 1.5 million people. It doesn't have enough infrastructure for a major league team. But that if you did move a major league team here, and if hockey wasn't here, I think it actually would work. The hockey team drains some of the corporate support you'd need for Major League Baseball. And I think baseball fits very well with the basketball season, which is the dominant sport in this area. So I'm in the minority that I think Major League Baseball could have a chance to work here. But most people who are in the know on this, say the people who own the Durham Bulls, they seem to think the market is 15 to 20 years away in terms of population and financial growth before it could have a Major League franchise here be successful. Matt, could you ever see a team being successful in this triangle area? And if so, would you just put it in Durham where the Bulls play now, or would you put it out in the hinterlands by the airport?
Probably the latter. I think in our lifetimes it's possible, but like you said, it's going to require a decade or more of further growth. And, you know, just transportation to the site.
Right.
You know, because I can imagine interstates would be a nightmare.
Yeah, traffic around here, for the size of the market, is not good because the infrastructure, because the growth has been so fast, infrastructure has not kept up with growth, and there's the mass transit is poor,
and
I would say.
And Charlotte kind of more or less conceded the point that they're not getting a team by building their AAA park the way they did.
Right. So it's a small footprint.
Unfortunately, that's another decade or two before we'll get a resolution on that, I would imagine.
It feels like we're a decade or maybe more from further MLB expansion. Do you think that's kind of where the situation is, Matt?
I think so. Unless it was a hot topic for the commissioner's office. And furthermore, another good point in here, which you added to the story, was that back in the 90s, MLB was able to extract $300 million in expansion fees from the D-backs and Rays.
Yeah, $130 million expansion fees for Tampa and Arizona.
So,
and in a brutal, a couple of kind of brutal markets. And this is right after the strike.
Yep.
Amazing.
But I don't think that same financial motivation is there right now for Major League Baseball.
What do you think expansion fees would be, though, now in a $9 billion industry if Major League Baseball said, you know what, we're going to throw this open, expansion fees, what will be what?
You have to at least double those.
I'd say like $300 million. I'm thinking $300 million minimum to expand. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks just sold for $850 million. The story today, and that's a second-rate basketball franchise historically. Obviously, they were the number one seed in the NBA's Eastern Conference this year. But historically, I've been to Hawks games, both in the Omni and in the Phillips Arena. Currently,
you've seen films.
I've seen films, and I've been in person. So I just don't see it. As a premier franchise, and they got nearly $1 billion. And clearly the LA Clippers are not a premier franchise historically, and their brand was pretty tarnished by the whole Donald Sterling stuff. They still sold for more than $1 billion. So I think $300 million minimum for a Major League Baseball expansion fee, I think it probably would be higher, and that is yet another barrier to expansion. So even though it seems like it makes some sense, I don't see it happening anytime soon, Matt. But it does seem like the people who I have a lot of triangle area followers, and a lot of guys really seem like they want, they love it to happen here, but they just don't think the corporate dollars are here for it to happen. And
I mean, selfishly, yeah, we would love it, but
I tend to agree. See, and that was my last question. I thought we'd wrap on that. Would you love it if, say, the Rays moved here? Mm-hmm. Would you prefer that, or do you like the fact that there's so many? Because I would have a feeling that would push out a lot of minor league franchises from this area. Would you like, we might lose the Burlington Indians or Royals. Like if they've been the Royals for like 7 years. What if a major league franchise being here caused the Carolina Mudcats, the Burlington Royals, even the Greensboro or Woods and Salem teams to move? Would that negatively affect your view of a major league team here if it cost the area, say, 2, 3, or 4 minor league franchises? Or would you not care? Would that be?
I think the benefit of actually seeing major league players from, you know, all teams come here would be, would outweigh any negative.
I would agree. If a team moved to North Carolina, would you rather they had spring training in Arizona or Florida? I'm just being ridiculous now. Florida, so you could drive it. Arizona's better spring training, but I like the drive. I like making the drive this spring. So
do you?
I did, actually. I did. I preferred the drive. The fact that I could drive to spring training and have my car and I have to rent.
True.
I like that. I was that versatility was a good deal. I enjoyed that. So, and
it's more cost effective for 4 people. But if it was just you going to Arizona,
oh, if it was just me, that's a no brainer. Yeah. But I had my kid in tow, so I had one of my kids, I should say. So, and I know my daughter would not have handled being in the car for 8 hours. So, that's a whole other point. But it was fun discussion, Matt. I think there's, you know, and there's been a lot of discussion on our Facebook page, oddbaseballamerica.com, in the comment section on both those stories. Did you expect that to happen with your DH story, or were you kind of hoping for it?
I knew it would be a contentious issue, yes.
Well, what's the next baseball that's going to be that's going to get more than 100 comments?
I'm going to let things lie for a while. The next one is about prospects who we can expect more power production from this season.
I like that idea. I'm trying to round up Eric Johnson of the Chicago White Sox and the Charlotte Knights. But we didn't make things happen yesterday. We'll just put it that way. Things happen yesterday. Hopefully we will today. And we'll also post some more footage of Matt's blazing 61-mile-an-hour fastball soon. Because there will be another Baseball America staff workout as we break Teddy Cahill into the office. And we have to post more video of it next time. We might just Periscope the whole thing. Just make the whole thing live. Do it live! So, more tomfoolery to come at baseballamerica.com. But the good discussion today, Matt. It was fun being back in the podcast nook with you. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with more on the next Baseball America podcast. For Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel. Until next time, so long, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.